He's the fine columnist for the Register Guard. Multiple ways to keep up, sports section of the actual paper. RegisterGuard.com, now the new DuckSports.com. On Twitter, it's at AustinMeekRG. Austin, a fine Tuesday to you. How are things?
Hey, Steve. Things are good. How are you doing?
All right. By now, people who follow this conference, I guess, nationally, know the absolute heartbreaking story of Washington State's quarterback, Tyler Helinski, who took his own life earlier this year. We learned he had the degenerative brain disorder, CTE, and you wrote about he and his family on Friday. What were the circumstances that led you to meet with his mom, Kim, and what is she doing in the hopes that, you know, no parent has to go through this kind of just horror?
Yeah, so I guess to go back a couple weeks, in the Friday column that I do, which is kind of a roundup of stories around the Pac-12, a couple weeks ago I wrote about the first home game at Washington State since Tyler Helinski took his own life in January, and his family was there, and they raised the flag before the game. But they were open about the fact that they were disappointed that Washington State didn't do more to acknowledge the tragedy. And reading more about that situation, it apparently is an intentional thing on Washington State's part, that they've consulted with some experts who have said the best thing to do in a case like that is not to draw attention to it. But the Helinskis feel differently, and I probably tend to share their view that when you have a situation like that, the best thing you can do is use it as a catalyst to get people talking about mental health and to encourage people to reach out for help if they need it. And so that's what the Helinskis have done. They started a foundation. And they're basically talking to anybody they can talk to try to raise awareness about this. So as people know, College Game Day was in Eugene on Saturday, and there's this tradition that the Washington State flag appears in the background every week. It's a pretty elaborate system of how this works. They send these flags all around the country to Washington State alums, and whoever is basically the closest person, even if they have to drive a few hours to get there, will show up at College Game Day to wave this flag. So when it was determined that College Game Day was coming to Eugene, then this network of Cougar fans got in touch with the Helinskis and asked Kim Helinski if she wanted to come and wave Tyler Helinski's number 3 flag at College Game Day. So she did. As my understanding, she took a flight Friday night, got in really early in the morning, drove to Eugene, and was here on Saturday morning to wave that flag on College Game Day.
No, it's amazing. It's, you know, you see that and you end up doing the, you're not crying, I'm not crying, you're crying. It's just, you know, you can't fathom what these people have to live with, but I admire their willingness to do what's possible so other parents might not have to go through this. You know, as we frequently do in the wake of these awful circumstances, we do move on, and I want to talk to you about Saturday. You've seen that place rocking your half decade or so here, and you've also seen it against Portland State. Safe to say, it had that kind of feel I don't think we've witnessed here in Eugene since maybe the latter part of 2014 or maybe early 2015.
Yeah, it kind of felt like old times, didn't it? I was thinking that if you've been in a coma for 4 years and you just woke up Saturday and you turned on that game, you'd think not very much had changed. It did have the same feel that it did in those big games a few years ago. Although it was different, too. You know, Oregon was cruising and the stadium was rocking, but it was a different, it was a different thing than we've seen from Oregon in the past, though. It wasn't the, you know, the blinding speed and the same way that Oregon used to dominate teams. Oregon was dominating Stanford kind of in the way that Stanford has dominated some teams, up front, physical, tough. That's not been the MO of Oregon football in recent history.
No, it's, you know, there was one point where it was a celebratory kind of celebrate good times by cooling the gang, and by the end it was grumpy old men. But you know, forget the outcome, the fumble, the pylon, all of it. The big picture, this team had a 24-7 lead and were knocking at the door to put it away. The way they were dominating, Did you under any circumstances even think that was possible against that team? Because I simply didn't.
Yeah, I texted to you this afternoon. It's weird, but I feel better about Oregon today than I did before that game, even though it's one of the most devastating losses in recent memory probably for a lot of Oregon fans. I feel like Oregon's potential and their ceiling is higher than I thought it was before seeing that game, just because of the way they did dominate Stanford for three quarters. That offensive line was the one we heard about in the preseason that I didn't feel like we had seen up to that point. But they did look physical and dominant at the point of attack. And the defense bottled up that running game. And the receivers, we've been talking all season about the receivers being a question mark, but Dylan Mitchell delivered. He looked like a guy who you can count on to be a go-to guy in this offense. So a lot of the questions that we had about Oregon, I think, got answered in those first three quarters. But now we have a new set of questions. Yeah. We've got to figure out how they're going to come back from this loss.
Now, as John Gruden said last week, hindsight is 50-50. But I'm on record for this game and pretty much the past 35 years since Bill Parcells became the Giants coach. He was a time management obsessor like me. I'm always about winding the clock down and doing nothing unnecessary. And they could have gotten it down to 10 or 15 seconds before punting. We know how it turned out. Your thoughts on the decision made in that moment to hand the ball off?
Yeah, often in sports, I think we get caught up looking at the result more so than the process. And when you look at the result, it obviously was the worst case scenario to fumble the ball with 51 seconds left and let Stanford go drive for a game-tying field goal. But when I look at the thought process behind it, and after hearing Mario Cristobal explain it, I feel like the thought process was solid. Mario Cristobal didn't want to put the punter on the field. When you punt the ball, there's a bunch of things that can go wrong. You can get the punt blocked. You can have a bad snap. Punter can drop the ball, have it returned for a touchdown. There's a lot of things that can go wrong when you punt the ball. Versus when you hand it off, there's really only one thing that can go wrong, and that's what happened, is the guy fumbles it. And it stinks, it hurts, but you just got to live with it. And I think if Mario Cristobal had it to do over again, he'd probably do pretty much the same thing. Now, I think, to me, the big failure there is you've got to have C.J. Verdell prepared for that situation. You got to tell him, hey, keep both hands on the ball. Don't fight for extra yards. If you get hit, go down, because the last thing you can do in that situation is fumble the ball, and that's what happened. Maybe they could have had a safer play called. Maybe you could have Justin Herbert sneak it on second and two and try to get the first down. I don't know. But in terms of running a play there and not taking a knee, I guess I don't fault the thought process behind not wanting to have to put your punter on the field.
Well, that's because you're not an obsessive compulsive New York neurotic, so there's a little bit of a difference there.
Maybe that's it, yeah.
I know we hit on this last week, but again, San Jose State, Portland State, Bowling Green, that's one thing. And while the final numbers and passing were pretty big for Stanford overall, what we saw in how they limited Bryce Love, how they muscled up on that fourth down play, I know you kind of glossed over it a little bit. This Jim Leavitt defense, which was so improved last year over 2016, I mean, is it possible we're seeing something that's actually graduated to another level of good?
I do think they've taken a step forward this year. I mean, obviously, compared to watching those two games, Mario Cristobal made the point. Last year it was 49-7. This year it's 38-31 in overtime, and certainly nobody at Oregon is happy about losing that game in the fashion that they did. But it was a big step forward, and a lot of that has come on defense. The part of the game where Oregon's defense, I think, got victimized a little bit was sort of what we talked about last week, I think, of how they were going to match up with those big receivers of Stanford. And it wasn't just Arcega-Whiteside. That tight end for Stanford was a problem all day. And if you're looking at Oregon's defense now, you probably would say that maybe the weak link is the fact that in the secondary, they're just not real big. And it was a bad matchup against Stanford. And Stanford was able to get those big receivers open at times. But overall, I think you'd have to say Oregon's defense gave a great effort. You know, they bottled up the run. Jordan Scott at the line of scrimmage is just a dominant player, and it doesn't show up in the stats necessarily, but, you know, he's just kind of a game wrecker. Having a guy like that in the middle of your defense really changes what you can do. So, again, I think, you know, I come away from that feeling pretty good about Oregon's defense. But they're going to have to make it show up then next week. It doesn't really matter if they go out and lay an egg against the Cal.
Yeah, I think the cliche is don't make the misery cost you two games. Couple final thoughts for Austin Meek of the Register Guard. There are losses, there are blowouts, there's heartbreak, then there's this. And I just alluded to it. I always think about the 2003 Red Sox lost Game 7 of the ALCS to the Yankees in a walk-off. They made up for it. They broke the curse the next year. How big a part of the job of the coaches and players is it, like we were just saying, overcome this, hit delete, whatever it has to do, and just limit the damage to one aggravating night?
Yeah, I think it can go one of two ways. A game like that can galvanize your team, can bring guys together. It can give them confidence from the standpoint of, hey, look at what we did against a top 10 team for three quarters. All we have to do is finish the game, and we can be really good. If I'm Mario Cristobal, that's the message I've got this week, is our potential is off the charts if we can just eliminate these mistakes that cost us the game. But it also can go the other way, where a team just gets demoralized, and they come away from that loss feeling sorry for themselves and, you know, feeling like their season is not going to be what it could have been because they blew this game. The finger pointing and all that stuff. If that happens, Oregon's not going to beat Cal. Cal's a good team, a team on the rise. It's going to be on the road late at night. That's a tough situation, and Oregon's mind has got to be right for that game. So, you know, it can go one of two ways. And the thing that came to mind for me, and I know this is not a comparison that Oregon fans certainly want to hear, but it reminded me a little bit of that Alamo Bowl a few years ago. That's the last time I've seen an Oregon team collapse in that way. And I'm not sure they ever really got over the hangover from that. But I feel better about their ability to get over this one because I just, you know, I feel like the ingredients are there for them to bounce back from this and go on to have a good season.
Well, I would say the numbers back you up because after the Alamo Bowl, they had their worst season since 1991. Let's close with some pleasant news. Well, for you, I've always been kind of a Chief fan because of my disdain for the Raiders and their fans. But what we're seeing with Pat Mahomes is just nuts. I didn't even realize they have Kelce, Stud, Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt, and also Sammy Watkins, who's once the fourth pick in the draft. So how much fun is this team to follow these days?
Well, it's been a lot of fun. And we talked about how long it's been since the Chiefs had a guy like this playing quarterback. So I'm gonna enjoy the ride for as long as it lasts. You know, I keep saying this isn't gonna last forever. But then every week, you know, Mahomes goes out and does something else. I don't know if you saw the play on Saturday against the 49ers, or on Sunday against the 49ers, where he's like reversing field and cutting back and going back the other way and throws it across his body about 30 yards for a touchdown. It's fun, you know. When the Chiefs drafted Patrick Mahomes, I was not really sure what they were getting. He was a guy who put up insane numbers at Texas Tech, but so many Texas Tech quarterbacks have done that and then not really gone on to much success in the NFL. But Mahomes is just a different breed. You know, he's so athletic. He's got such a live arm. And, you know, he's in a system with a coach and Andy Reid who knows how to use that. I can't help but think, to kind of tie this in with an Oregon theme, I can't help but wonder, you know, what could Marcus Mariota have done in the NFL if he had a coach like Andy Reid who was willing to incorporate the things that he did well in college? Because you watch the Titans now, and Marcus Mariota just has never had the luxury of working with a coach who really was able to bring out the best of what he did in college. And as a result, his NFL career has not really lived up to what it probably could have been. But when you see a guy with that skill set in an offense that fits him so well, like Mahomes and the Chiefs. It's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I kind of forget that he's a big guy. I mean, he's 6'3", maybe not that tall, but he's 225, 230. He's just a beast. Man, that team is a lot of fun. Folks, mm-hmm. he is Austin Meek. RegisterGuard.com, DuckSports.com on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Enjoy your downtime. You're not going to Berkeley, so you could, I guess, hang out, watch college football, spend time with your family like a normal person. But we really appreciate your time as always, and we'll catch up next week.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Take it easy.